Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Hurricane Beryl.
Dangerous, devastating hurricane has come and has gone. And it has left in its wake immense destruction, pain, suffering.
Hurricane Beryl is devastating the Caribbean, including massive destruction in islands in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. We'll go to St. Vincent to speak with Prime Minister Ralph Gonsalves. Then yet another mass displacement of Palestinians in Gaza as the Israeli military issues evacuation orders for up to a quarter of a million people in eastern Rafah and again in Khan Yunis.
Yesterday evening, we were staying, and all was fine in the European hospital. We were told to evacuate the European hospital. We came, and both my legs are broken, and my pelvis. We came to Nasser Hospital, but it was full. I'm staying in the street, waiting for them to find me a place inside the hospital.
We'll go to Gaza to speak with a doctor who was forced to evacuate from European Hospital, one of the few remaining partially functioning hospitals in Gaza that's now shut down. And as Democrats discuss whether President Biden should stand down as a candidate following his disastrous debate performance, we'll speak with Jim Zogby, senior member of the Democratic National Committee, about his call for an open and transparent nomination process, a dignified way, he says, for President Biden to step down. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Residents of Jamaica are bracing for life-threatening winds and storm surge as Hurricane Beryl set to make landfall Wednesday afternoon. The now Category 4 storm has left a trail of devastation across the Caribbean, killing at least six people. Ahead of the storm's arrival, the Jamaican Prime Minister, Andrew Holness, called for a stronger climate action from wealthier nations.
Hurricane Beryl is the earliest Category 5 hurricane on record. It highlights the growing impact of climate change on global weather patterns, particularly on small island developing states like Jamaica. While our carbon emissions are minuscule, our region bears the brunt of the impacts of climate change. The hurricane further highlights the urgent need for global climate action and targeted support to enhance resilience against the escalating dangers of climate change.
Only two other hurricanes have made landfall in Jamaica in the last 40 years. Later in the broadcast, we'll get an update from Prime Minister Ralph Gonsalves of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Gaza's health ministry says Israeli attacks have killed at least 28 Palestinians and wounded 125 others in the past 24 hours after Israel's military put a quarter million Palestinians in the city of Khan Yunis under evacuation orders. Among the dead is Dr. Hassan Hamdan, head of the Burns and Plastic Surgery Department at Nasser Hospital. He was killed along with his entire family after Israel struck their house in Deir al-Balah. Just hours earlier, the family had followed Israel's evacuation order and fled north. Meanwhile, hundreds of sick and injured patients fled the European hospital on foot ahead of another ground invasion of Khan Yunis by Israeli soldiers. This is Khan Yunis resident Mati Abu Siraj.
There are no other hospitals. All the hospitals were destroyed. Half of them collapsed and went out of service, except the European hospital. And now it seems that it will go out of service and there will no longer be hospitals. Whoever gets wounded will die.
Palestinian health officials are warning of the spread of disease after Israel's assault on Khan Yunis destroyed water and sanitation infrastructure, flooding entire neighborhoods with sewage and dirty water. Resident Mohammed Abayouk said the disaster is threatening the health of his children.
When the Israeli army entered Khan Yunis, they caused a lot of damage and sewage flooded into homes. What you see here is nothing. The greater suffering is what our children endure at home and the stench of the sewage. The smell has caused many diseases for our children and little ones. We cough, we suffer from the bad smell, everything. Our children suffer from itching, bed bugs, and other strange things. We can't sleep at night because of the mosquitoes.
A dozen former Biden administration officials who resigned their posts to protest U.S. policy towards Gaza and Israel have written an open letter calling on their former colleagues to amplify calls for peace. The 12 former U.S. government officials write, quote, "This failed policy has not achieved its stated objectives. It's not made Israelis any safer. It has emboldened extremists while it's been devastating for the Palestinian people, ensuring a vicious cycle of poverty and hopelessness," they wrote. This week, Mariam Hassanan, special assistant at the U.S. Interior Department, became the 12th person to quit over Biden's support for the Gaza assault. At 24 years old, she's the youngest such resignee. In 2020, she cast her first ever vote for president of the United States for Joe Biden. She spoke to Democracy Now! Tuesday.
I resigned ultimately because I felt it necessary to advocate for Palestinians who are at the hands of Israel undergoing a genocide. And with the U.S.'s kind of funding and backing and support of Israel, I felt that being in the executive branch, especially being a Biden-Harris appointee, made me complicit, made me associated with something that I most definitely don't want to be associated with.
To see our interviews with other Biden administration officials who've resigned to protest U.S. support for the assault on Gaza, go to democracynow.org. Here in New York, a Manhattan judge has postponed Donald Trump's felony sentencing trial until September 18th. Trump faces 34 felony charges of attempting to unlawfully influence the 2016 presidential election by falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments made to adult film star Stormy Daniels. He was convicted of all. The delay gives Trump's lawyers more time to persuade a judge the conviction should be thrown out following the Supreme Court's landmark ruling this week that Trump has broad immunity from prosecution for official acts he committed as president. Former President Trump's ex-lawyer Rudy Giuliani has been stripped of his license to practice law in New York over his lies and false statements about the 2020 election and his efforts to overturn Joe Biden's victory. On Tuesday, a panel of New York appellate court judges ruled Giuliani, quote, not only deliberately violated some of the most fundamental tenets of the legal profession, but he also actively contributed to the national strife that has followed the 2020 presidential election, for which he is entirely unrepentant, unquote. Giuliani already faces criminal charges for election interference in Arizona and Georgia. His law license is under review in Washington, D.C. President Biden's meeting with Democratic governors behind closed doors today as party leaders grow increasingly panicked about Biden's dismal performance in last week's presidential debate, where the president appeared halting, disjointed, and frequently lost his train of thought. On Tuesday, Biden told donors at a campaign fundraiser in Virginia he, quote, almost fell asleep on stage, unquote, something he blamed on exhaustion from international travel. His remarks came as the New York Times reported aides and others who've encountered Biden behind closed doors notice he's increasingly appeared confused or listless or would lose the thread of conversations. On Tuesday, California Congress member, former Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said both Biden and Trump should take mental fitness tests. And for the first time, a sitting Democratic member of Congress has called on Biden to step aside. Lloyd Doggett represents Texas's 37th congressional district in Austin. He spoke Tuesday evening with CNN's Anderson Cooper.
And I think we would be better off if we had a new candidate who could present a new vision for our country. And we can do that if we have an open and fair democratic process over the next few weeks.
In India, at least 121 people were killed at an overcrowded religious gathering in Uttar Pradesh state Tuesday, when a sudden surge of thousands of worshippers triggered a stampede. Event planners had sought permission for up to 80,000 people to attend, but an estimated 250,000 showed up. Youth-led mass protests are continuing across Kenya, even after President William Ruto withdrew an unpopular tax bill in response to the unrest. Protesters took to the streets of the coastal city of Mombasa on Tuesday, denouncing police violence against demonstrators. They were met by armed forces who fired tear gas and charged at demonstrators.
Gen Zs are suffering because lack of job. Lack of job. There's no job in Kenya. People are trying, are starving. They are working hard, but there's nothing they can get.
Since protests began in mid-June, the Kenya National Human Rights Commission estimates at least 39 people have been killed. Most casualties happen when police opened fire on crowds that gathered at the parliament complex in Nairobi last week. Over 360 people have been injured in what the commission described as excessive and disproportionate police force. Indigenous leader and political prisoner Leonard Peltier has again been denied parole and won't be eligible for another full hearing until 2039, when he would be 94 years old. Peltier, who is 79, has been behind bars for nearly half a century for a crime he says he did not commit. His health continues to deteriorate. His 1977 conviction for alleged involvement in killing two FBI agents in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation was riddled with irregularities and prosecutorial misconduct. Supporters vowed to continue to fight for his freedom. And the civil rights and criminal defense attorney Martin Stoller has died. Over a legal career spanning more than half a century, Stoller represented anti-Vietnam War protesters, Black Panthers, Attica prisoners, and members of Occupy Wall Street. In 2015, Martin Stoller spoke on Democracy Now! After he won acquittal for activists arrested during Flood Wall Street protests against the climate crisis.
The court found all 10 defendants not guilty, releasing them and basically endorsing the position that they took, that climate change is a serious, urgent problem requiring attention, and basically complimenting the defendants for being out there and protesting. And then because the police department made a mistake in the way they ordered people to leave the demonstration area, the judge said the order to leave was impermissible under the Constitution, and therefore he found all the defendants not guilty for violating an unlawful order.
Martin Stoller was 81 years old, and those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Residents of Jamaica are bracing for life-threatening winds and storm surge as Hurricane Beryl is likely to make landfall this afternoon. The now Category 4 storm has left a trail of devastation across the Caribbean, killing at least six people, wiping away large swaths of the island of Carriacou in Grenada and St. Vincent and the Grenadines, where most homes on Union Island have been completely destroyed. Jamaica and the Cayman Islands remain under a hurricane warning. Ahead of the storm's arrival, the Jamaican Prime Minister Andrew Holness called for stronger climate action from wealthier nations.
Hurricane Beryl is the earliest Category 5 hurricane on record. It highlights the growing impact of climate change on global weather patterns, particularly on small island developing states like Jamaica. While our carbon emissions are minuscule, our region bears the brunt of the impacts of climate change. The hurricane further highlights the urgent need for global climate action and targeted support to enhance resilience against the escalating dangers of climate change.
Only two other hurricanes have made landfall in Jamaica in the last 40 years. Beryl's expected to bring several inches of rainfall that could flood Jamaica's coast. Beryl had strengthened to a Category 5 Tuesday after devastating the Windward Islands. The storm is expected to head into Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula by Friday. Beryl's by far the earliest Category 5 storm ever observed in the Atlantic and comes as climate scientists predict an extremely active 2024 hurricane season. For more, we're going to St. Vincent, where We're joined by Ralph Gonsalves, Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Prime Minister, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about what you just saw as you toured the disaster area?
Thank you very much for having me. In the southern Grenadines of our archipelago, which is of 32 islands, 9 are inhabited. What we have in the south is really Beryl's Armageddon. Union Island is flattened. That's an island of 2,500 persons. Mairo, similarly, with 100 family homes. And Canawan, somewhere between Mairo and Union Island in terms of population, that they're all severely damaged. In fact, on Union Island, everybody is homeless, similarly in Mairo. It's terrible. I went there yesterday to Union Island, and we are evacuating persons yesterday. About 300 came out, and we are going to continue the evacuation today. We're taking a lot of food and supplies. It's going to be a Herculean effort to rebuild. And though Union and Mairo and Canawan and the resort islands of Petit Saint Vincent and Palm Island, though they are by far the worst hit, what we have had in Bekwe and on the main island of St. Vincent is also terrible. It's just awful. And as Andrew Holness said, these are what we see here are the consequences of a rampaging climate change. We are in the era of the Anthropocene, and the developed countries, the major emitters, are not taking this matter seriously. The world, if we don't move to net zero, we are going to be a very inhospitable place to be in another 2-3 decades. I mean, this is not scaremongering, this is science. And we are on the front lines of this. The devastation wrought in St. Vincent and the Grenadines is going to be hundreds of millions of dollars. I wouldn't be surprised at the end of it that we're probably going to have to rebuild upwards of 1,000 homes. And it's a country with 46,000 households. So you will see the magnitude of that. And then we have to repair others. And public buildings, the disaster at the seashore, you know, the erosion of the land degradation because of the raging seas. We are in a sense going up a down escalator. Every time we make some progress, we get hit by these natural disasters and we have to start afresh. And every time we have fresh hope.
Prime Minister, I'm wondering, the main airport, Argyle International Airport, has been significantly impacted. What about the arrival of relief and recovery supplies? So when do you expect the airport to reopen for regular operations?
Well, fortunately, we had done a lot of preparation at Argyle International. And We can fly in and out there. We did so yesterday for emergency supplies. And hopefully, we are going to be in a situation to have commercial traffic after midday today. We are engaging entities and agencies across the Caribbean. We had a meeting of the Caribbean community heads of government yesterday morning. The governments across the world, in North America and Venezuela and Cuba and Europe, they're all contacting us. The Secretary General of the United Nations, my friend Antonio Guterres, he is in Central Asia. He still is in Central Asia. Called me yesterday and he's making an appeal for St. Vincent and the Grenadines and Grenada. And we probably have to do a pledge and conference jointly with Grenada. It's a difficult time ahead. the Americans have a saying, I think, that, you know, if you have an 800-pound gorilla, try to eat it one bite at a time. This is horrendous.
And you mentioned the CARICOM community. The 20 nation communities leaders were supposed to meet this week in Grenada. What are the updates on that summit? Will it be rescheduled?
That would be rescheduled, but we had a virtual meeting yesterday. We are fortunate still to have that telecommunication possibility. But in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, we are without electricity in most of the places, and the telecommunication systems are very sketchy. Sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down. Of course, in the Southern Grenadines, it's like a different age altogether. It's just imagine an island where everybody is homeless.
Prime Minister,
the faces of men and women are strained and anxious.
Prime Minister Ruff.
Sorry. Is that Amy?
Yes. Hi, Prime Minister Gonsalves. You've been quoted recently calling the annual UN climate summit, the COP, a largely talk shop. What final message do you have for the United States, for the Western nations, when it comes to this climate catastrophe?
Well, I want to say to the climate deniers, get real. And I want to say those who know about climate change, let's do some walking rather than just talking. And for the populations as a whole, they must call their leaders to account. And they must insist that this matter, this existential matter for all humanity, be addressed with urgency. We have to get net zero by 2050. I notice in the United States of America, one candidate is saying, drill, baby, drill, and to cause more emissions, and denying climate change exists, you know, and so on and so forth. We have to get real with this. And we have a lot of promises being made by developed countries, and hardly any of them are being fulfilled. So we get the more intense, the more severe hurricanes, and oscillating with droughts, land degradation. It's all different sides of the same coin. It's established by science. So I'm hoping that programs like yours, and I listen to you all the time, Amy, that will hold a progressive line on these matters, and that progressive peoples the world over will unite on this vital existential question. We don't have climate justice. The international financial institutions are not aligned to help. Now, we're going to have hundreds of millions of dollars in infrastructure, which we have to recover and rebuild. By the time you get a project or you get some resources put together through the World Bank, it's a 3-4 years down the road. By then you have an accumulation of other disasters. And you, as I say, you're going up the dung escalator. It's just terrible, and it's so unfair, and it's unjust. But more than that, the selflessness of the current dominant political economy in the world, that it's driving all of us towards, if not extinction, to a terrible, inhospitable place called Earth.
Well, Ralph Gonsalves, we thank you so much for being with us, Prime Minister of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. This is Democracy Now! Thank you for joining us from St. Vincent. Next up, yet another mass displacement of Palestinians in Gaza as the Israeli military issues evacuation orders for up to 250,000 people in eastern Rafah and Khan Yunis. Already the death toll is near 39,000. We'll go to Gaza to speak with a doctor who was forced to evacuate from European hospitals. Stay with us.
في الأعماق روح انخط الشمس بين الموج بغطي ليلهن في الأعماق قصص بتدور عطري حكي مش منتهي والسطح بعيد 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 في الأعماق رحين وخيط الشمس بينهن الموج بغطي ليلهن في الأعماق قصص بتدور عطري حكي مش منتهي
by Ruba Shamshoon. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. In Gaza, an Israeli airstrike Tuesday afternoon on a building in Deir al-Balah inside an Israeli declared safe zone killed at least a dozen people, including nine members of one family across three generations, grandparents, parents, and children as young as 3 years old. This according to the Associated Press. Among those killed was Dr. Hassan Hamdan, head of the Burns and Plastic Surgery Department at Nasser Hospital. The family had fled their home in the middle of the night after the Israeli military ordered new evacuation orders for areas in southern Gaza, including eastern Rafah and Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city. The United Nations estimates up to 250,000 people live in the area covered by the evacuation order, which has triggered the third mass displacement of Palestinians in Gaza in as many months. Over 1 million people have fled Rafah since May, following Israel's invasion there, and tens of thousands have been displaced in the past week amidst a new Israeli offensive in the Shujaya neighborhood in Gaza City. Monday's evacuation order also prompted a frantic flight from European Hospital in eastern Khan Yunis, one of the few remaining partially functioning hospitals in Gaza. The facility shut down after thousands of medical staff, patients, and displaced families seeking shelter on the hospital grounds evacuated overnight. The Red Cross said some families dragged patients in their hospital beds through the streets for up to 6 miles to reach safety. More than 37,900 Palestinians have been killed and over 87,100 wounded in Gaza since October. There's an unknown number of thousands dead in the rubble. We hope to reach Gaza momentarily. But first, we go to London, where we're joined by Dr. James Smith, an emergency medical doctor who returned from Gaza in June. He spent nearly 2 months treating patients at trauma stabilization points in Al-Mawasi and Rafah. He also worked in the emergency rooms of Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah and Al-Auda Hospital in Nusayrat. Tell us the latest that you're hearing, Dr. Smith, as the situation becomes ever more dire in Gaza.
Thanks, Amy. As you say, the situation is dire, and indeed it was dire when we last spoke. In fact, it was dire prior to October of last year. As you've reported, nearly 250,000 people are now in this new red zone, as designated by the Israeli military. We've heard reports, as you've mentioned, of caretakers and family members having to drag patients from the European Gaza Hospital several kilometres in order to seek some degree of safety. Now, of course, that notion of safety is an incredibly fragile one in Gaza. We've heard repeatedly, and indeed I've seen it firsthand, that nowhere is safe in Gaza. As you've mentioned, Dr. Hamdan was killed along with members of his family yesterday in a supposedly safe area. There are, on a daily basis, air and artillery strikes, naval shelling from the Israeli warships off the coastline in Gaza into areas that are supposedly safe areas. The situation with respect to the European Gaza hospital is beyond catastrophic. EGH is one of the biggest hospitals in Gaza after Shifa and Nasser, both of which have been intentionally targeted and decimated over the course of recent months by the Israelis. And what that means, that the force